You shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. My name is Judge Scholin. To my right is Judge Allen. To my left is Judge Totes. We're here today to hear the case of Eddie T. Campbell versus Robert L. Wilkie, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 17-0934. Would counsel for each party please note your appearance for the record?
Kenny Dohakis for appellant.
Mark Vichich for secretary. With me today, counsel's table is Richard Daly.
Thank you. Does appellant's counsel wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, you can begin when you're ready.
May it please the court. Thank you for this opportunity to argue Mr. Campbell's very important case. Mr. Campbell served in the Army from 79 to 80. In service, he received an antibiotic that changed his life forever. In 2002, he finally requested compensation, which the VA denied. The issues in this case are very complex, and pose difficult questions, but thankfully the parties agree on many of these issues.
If I could just ask a preliminary question.
Yes, Your Honor.
That my clerk and I wondered about. You had very thorough briefing and reply brief. In your reply brief, you didn't make any further arguments regarding Q in the January 2008 RO decision. Do you wish to abandon that argument, or you just didn't have anything in the reply brief?
The January 2008 RO decision?
Yeah.
No, we did not abandon any issues.
Thank you.
So, first, the parties do agree that the board misapplied 38 CFR 3.165B. We disagree, however, whether the board correctly applied the term material. Mr. Campbell argues that a February 2004 VA treatment note is material such that it kept the 2002 claim pending until finally granted in 2012. And whether this treatment note is material turns on whether it is cumulative or corroborative evidence. We could not find a lot of case law on this topic. However, the two cases cited in our brief, Power and Malloy, are both instructive. In Power, the court ruled that the medical evidence that corroborated a prior medical opinion was material as a matter of law. The evidence at issue was a re-articulation of a prior medical opinion, similar to what we have in this case. The court did explain, however, that a claimant, and I'm quoting here, cannot endlessly reopen a claim a doctor at a time. There will be a point reached where it can be said that the evidence being proffered has been fairly considered and that further rearticulation of already corroborated evidence is indeed cumulative. This suggests that evidence that corroborates a legal theory may be cumulative if that theory had already been completely disposed of by the VA or if prior corroborative evidence had already been considered.
So what is it in the treatment note that you think would bring it within the Malloy-Paller description? In other words, what is it about the note that is, in your view, corroborative, a word that I'm going to avoid saying after that? So,
Yes, Judge Allen, thank you. I think that there's 2 points. Number one is it does rearticulate what the CMP examiner said. Specifically, it says that Mr. Campbell's symptoms were in continuity with his prior treatment. The second thing that it does is...
Can we stop just on that one?
Yes, Your Honor.
So I could see scenarios in which evidence that merely recounted what somebody else had said could actually corroborate something. If, in fact, there was a dispute earlier on that that is what somebody said. But that doesn't seem to be this scenario. It seemed to be that the evidence of what the earlier CMP examiner had said was before the board, and this just was repeating what he or she had said. Do I have that wrong?
Your Honor, I think that it's mostly correct, but I think that there's a distinction there, and the distinction is directly on point with Power, in that the medical opinion in Power was a re-articulation. They didn't say anything really new, but the examiner or that doctor did confirm the prior opinion.
And that's, I agree with you, right? But is it, that's the question here, right? So it would be one thing if, you know, Dr. Sholin here gives an opinion, and then Dr. Allen comes in and gives the same opinion, but I exercise my own independent judgment to reach the same conclusion.
Or say, I agree with.
Well, or even I agree with. But if I just were to say, to continue my metaphor, Dr. Sholin said X.
My mother would be so proud.
I'm not sure that corroborates. All it does is describe that that's what somebody else did. You see the difference? Because I agree with you, right? In fact, if a second medical professional submits a report that reaches exactly the same medical conclusion, that is actually powerful corroborating evidence. But if all the second one does is say the earlier one said this, I'm not sure that adds anything of a material value.
Yes, I agree with that, Your Honor.
Okay.
However, the second part that makes Dr. Baer's opinion corroborative, or rather material, is that it also explains the CMP examiner's opinion in new light. And specifically, as we raised in our briefs, service connection was denied initially because there was no, and they didn't really use these terms, but the words that they used were that that there was a lack of a clear association between the current disability and complaints in service. To me, that sounds like there was no nexus opinion. Dr. Baer's came in and said there was continuity with his prior treatment. And that sounds a lot like continuity of symptomatology under 3.303B, whereas 3.303A requires a nexus opinion. And so with the chronic conditions as outlined in 3.309, the fact that Dr. Baer's kind of shone a light on the fact that there was a continuity of symptoms from his prior treatment to the present and his current condition, I think establishes materiality.
And we can reach that, in your view, so as I understand it, the RO never considered this evidence either substantively or as to whether or not it was new and material. Is that
correct?
Right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And do you agree that we can reach that issue independently as the court?
I do, Your Honor.
Even to rule in your favor, as opposed to what I consider an oddity, that we could consider it if we were to then say there's no prejudicial error because it's not material.
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, sometimes we can make factual findings, even though we're an appellate court, because we have the obligation to take due account of the rule of prejudicial error, so it's like a one-way ratchet. We can say you lose, but in some situations we can't say you win because we would be making positive findings. Right?
Right.
You see what I mean?
Yes, Your Honor.
And so do you agree that because the standard of review for what is new and material is de novo, meaning it's a question of law, that we can actually reach that issue ourselves?
I do, Your Honor. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Just to follow up, I mean, so is it, if I understand Judge Allen's questions and your answer, that you're saying it's not necessarily even a reasons and bases error that the material was redundant? And your argument would be something's either redundant or it's corroborative. That's an either-or proposition.
Yes, Your Honor.
A factual matter. The record contains all the facts necessary to decide that question, and it's corroborative. Is that?
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. And I think getting to that point, Judge Toth, is the board actually did say, make a fact finding that the court can hang its hat on without finding new facts to say that it is material, because the board did say that the opinion established that the CMP examiner said Mr. Campbell's schizoaffective disorder was in continuity with his prior symptom. That's a finding of fact from the board record at page 15. So even if you were reluctant to you know, exercise de novo review on that particular fact, I think that the board, just as a favorable finding of fact, supports that the materiality of the medical evidence.
Your opposing counsel argues that this error is non-prejudicial of 3.156B, which we haven't really discussed the big picture part yet, but let's say we were to agree with them. You argue that there's still a problem because they didn't address 3.303B. Actually, I'll withdraw that. Keep going, please.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. And so I want to next just talk briefly about Malloy. This case reinforces this standard of corroborative versus cumulative. In this case, the initial claim was denied because there was no medical evidence of treatment in the service records. So there were no medical records, essentially. The evidence at issue was a medical opinion that was based on the veteran's lay testimony alone. So it didn't rely on medical evidence. The court pointed out that there was no rating or decision that expressly rejected the history of a back injury or trauma during service is not credible. Rather, the prior denials denied the claim on the grounds that there were no service records shown in service. The court determined that the evidence was material because it was corroborative of prior opinions and it did not just reiterate the prior opinions. And I think that's getting to your point, Judge Allen. Instead, it provided new medical information that the VA had not previously considered. I think the court here is suggesting that evidence that discusses some aspect of the claim that was not previously considered is material. And I want to emphasize here that we're not arguing that a narrow rule of materiality is appropriate. We believe that any evidence that corroborates is material. And I think it's a spectrum of how much it corroborates. But as the Powler court said, at some point, enough is enough. One can only provide the same opinion on the same facts so many times before it does, in fact, become cumulative. However, in this case, the evidence is corroborative because it highlights a theory of service connection, continuity of symptomatology, that the RO never considered or ruled on.
So can I ask a question that, moving a little bit to the bigger picture idea. So we've sort of got, let me just tell you how I see this. So we have sort of three avenues here for an earlier effective date for your client. They all lead to the same point, but they have different paths, right? There's 3.156B, 3.156C, and then your Q challenge.
Yes, sir.
Right, okay. So I want to think a little bit about how the Q issue theoretically fits in with 3.156B. That's just as a preface. So do you agree with the Secretary that the SOC can be subject to a Q challenge at least when the SOC is based on a DRO, a decision review officer, de novo review?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So how does that work in the context of 3.156B? Here's what I mean, right? So we have the rating decision, right? And 3.156B says if stuff comes within 1 year of that, you have this obligation that Barod says if you don't do it, that never becomes final, right? So we have this weird situation here where we have the rating decision and we'll assume as a factual matter that within 1 year of that decision, though, comes this medical record, okay? But now we have the SOC that if we hold it to be subject to Q, means it's now the final decision, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And nothing comes in within 1 year of that. So it's true that we're going to take it that the SOC didn't consider that February medical record, but that's just a mistake in the SOC, And so if we accept the argument about the SOC being subject to Q, does that actually negate from this case any argument about 3.156B because the relevant one-year period starts with the SOC, or does it still stay with the rating decision? Are you following the question?
I do follow your question, Your Honor.
Good, because my law clerk and I practiced trying to get that out for a long time, and it's a very complicated issue.
Well, I think that the best way to answer that is to go back to 3156B, and if that evidence was never considered, then the claim remains pending. And they can, the VA, the regional office, can re-adjudicate this for once a year in forever. But if they never address that particular evidence, that initial, there is no finality.
So in this case, right, since we have these three things that are independent means to get you what you want, and some of them can exist simultaneously, perhaps, but maybe at some point they can't. So in other words, if we hold that in agreement with the parties that the rating decision never became final because there was no assessment of this treatment note within, or that was submitted within 1 year, do we then have any power to say whether an SOC subject to a DROE decision is subject to CUBE? Because at that point, it never became final. You see what I mean?
I understand.
Would that be an advisory opinion on that question?
I think that the issue of whether the statement of the case is subject to CUBE would become moot at that point because there is no final decision. And so I think it would be an advisory opinion.
I understand that the answer you'd give me on this point is like what I would have done when I was a lawyer, which is really, I don't care why my client wins, I just want to win, right? But so put that aside, right? If you had to pick which of these three avenues you would prefer to win on because you think it may be best for you, which one of them would they be? Which one would it be?
It would be 3156B, Your Honor. And the reason for that is the claim is pending, it's already been awarded, and there's nothing more to do but to adjust the effective date and assign a rating. The other ones require some additional analysis and the potential for more litigation.
So it's funny because I was going to ask the same thing. So I understood your argument as you're arguing in the alternative, and then obviously 3.156B and Q have very different finality. So one would basically eliminate finality, and the other requires finality. So your point is in the ordering of how we would adjudicate that, we would proceed first through 3.156B, because obviously if that destroyed finality, then the Q becomes essentially kind of falls away.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay. And second to that would be 3.156C. And I think for obvious reasons, under 156C, there's a reconsideration of the claim, which allows the claimant to, the regional office and the board to consider all of the evidence of record to include anything, and to include adding more evidence if needed. And under Q, they're stuck with whatever law and evidence was in the record.
And as I understand it, the parties are in entire agreement with respect to 3.156C. Is
yes,
that right?
Your Honor.
Okay.
That's the way I understand it.
In this case argues that, secretary in this case argues that the board's analysis satisfies Barad. I know you're arguing that they didn't address the 3.303 argument that you're making. Putting that aside, do you think that the board performing some sort of analysis of new and material evidence submitted back then could satisfy Barad, or does it have to be a regional office decision?
I have not considered that, Your Honor, but I think on its face, I would say obviously it'd be beneficial for the regional office to make that determination in the first instance so that it can be appealed, because all claimants are entitled to one decision on appeal. I'm not sure that any of the case law has addressed that particular question, and I would say, based on that fact alone, that it should be the regional office that has to do it in the first instance.
Getting back to the question of, can an SOC be a final decision for Q purposes, I'm struggling a little bit with how do we combine the different parts of the statutes, in that SOCs are under Chapter 71. The Q statute that we would be implementing here would probably be 5109, which seems to specifically refer to decisions made under Chapter 51. How does that get put together?
I think that the Q statute discusses specifically the agency of original jurisdiction, or not the board. And so when reviewing these decisions, the thing to keep in mind is that the original rating decision, in fact, never became final, because the statement of the case replaced it. And so when you look at the regulations, 3.2600, the review by the DRO in this case requires a new decision that considers all of the evidence without deference to the decision being reviewed, and also a non-final decision for review.
I agree with you that it can be a decision. I just don't know how to apply the Q statute that pertains to decisions made under Chapter 51 to an SOC that's a decision made under Chapter 71. So how do we magically transform this hybrid decision? Because should it be a board review then? Although Chapter 71, I think, discusses board decisions under that Q. So does that make it irreviewable?
I think that's my primary argument, is that we're stuck in this no man's land where in this case in particular there was evidence developed between the rating decision and the statement of the case. And even though 3156B says all evidence relates with the claim, under Q, you can only consider the evidence that existed when the decision was made. And so if the statement of the case is non-reviewable and you're stuck challenging the original decision, then this evidence, which of course we're arguing is helpful to his claim and actually proves it, is as if it never existed. And I don't think that's within the Congress's mandate of having a veteran-friendly system, nor the VA's own mandate of doing everything they can to help the claimants here, and especially veterans.
I appreciate the spirit of that.
Yes.
But the mechanics of it is what I'm struggling with.
And, you know, so you might guess I'm worried about holding that an SOC in any circumstances is necessarily subject to Q, because I sort of feel like it's like a Don Rumsfeld moment, right? That there are things I know I don't know, but there are lots of things I don't know I don't know. So, for example, if this SOC is now a final decision subject to Q in some metaphysical way, do you get an additional 1 year from that point to file the notice of disagreement? Because it's like it
new gets, final?
Right, it's like new final. I think that's where the court is, or where this side of the court is struggling with this, is that it just seems like there are a lot of things that are related to that determination that are problematic.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's something I had not considered. But I think that I think that the fact that the substantive appeal discloses any further action on that appeal, on that particular decision, may shut off that avenue for 3156B. I think that when you're...
So can you say that again? Because I'm not sure I followed that, which is my fault.
Just one moment. Don, please add 5 minutes.
So because the substantive appeal is required within a set time period, and it may be close to a year, depending on how fast they get the statement of the case out, but generally it's 60 days later, once that shuts off the claim dies at that point.
Right, but so, for example, my hypothetical earlier about the within, 3.156B talks about within 1 year, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Right, and so you would have this odd scenario then. See, this is what I mean about the things that are hard to keep in mind. Yes, you're right, the substantive appeal comes 60 days after the SOC, but in some theory, if that's a decision that 3.156B follows on, or yes, this is the substantive decision, but the rating decision still exists for purposes of 3.156B, right? It's a complicated series of questions.
Yes, it is, Your Honor. And I would say, naturally, as an appellant's attorney, that 156B would apply and you'd get an extra year. Having not considered that specific issue, though, I'm not prepared to give a full response to that, but I think based on the language of 3156B, it probably would apply there as a final decision by the RO.
I'd like to talk a little bit about 3.156C argument. Can you give me any of your insights on the definition of relevant for 3.156C and how you view that as different from new and material evidence?
Yes, Your Honor. Relevant is... a fun term, I think, in veterans law, because it has lots of different meanings. And of course, the Secretary or Congress has spoken on the issue just recently when they said relevant means it tends to prove or disprove a matter. That issue is actually before the Supreme Court. They granted certiorari on Kaiser in December, and so we should get an answer to that question. I know that currently the law says that it's a very limited, narrow view in that it has to and somehow relate to the reason for the denial. I think that under the current law, as announced by the Federal Circuit, Mr. Campbell's service records qualify as relevant in that they relate to the reason for his original denial, which was that he didn't have evidence showing that he his service symptoms were in continuity or related to his current diagnosis. And because they were treatment records for his condition in service, which the VA, of course, never had, and in particular, Dr. Rainwater specifically informed us that he relied in part on those records to form his opinion. And I think that speaks to the relevance of those records. Because if they weren't helpful to him, then he wouldn't have said so, and he could have made, granted the CMP examiner did find a favorable opinion without those records, but that doesn't mean that they're not relevant just because he could have formed a positive opinion, but the fact that he used them to support his opinion and form that favorable opinion, I think strengthens the case for being relevant. And as far as the distinguishing between material, I think that they are definitely, I think the way Kaiser has currently defined them, I think they're very close together, and there's not a lot of light in between them. I don't believe that's correct, although it is the law. I think that relevant needs to be have a little bit more leeway, especially considering because these records were easily obtainable by the VA, and they didn't do it when they originally decided his claim. If there are no other questions, I'll save the rest of my argument for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Again, excuse me, Mark Vichich on behalf of the Secretary. The parties agree on a number of issues. It appears that their main primary area of dispute is the 3.156B issue, so the Secretary today will begin by addressing that argument. The Secretary would also like to take the opportunity today to emphasize several points on the novel issues to whether a statement of the case can be collaterally attacked on grounds of Q, and the Secretary will address any other issues that that come up. So starting with the 3.156B argument, I wanted to maybe start with what Judge Allen, what I recall Judge Allen saying. This court's decision in King states that new and material evidence determinations are subject to the clearly erroneous standard of review. The board here did look at that February 2004 treatment record and expressly make that factual finding. So this court can review that board's factual finding for clear error. The Secretary is asking the court, if it even gets to that question, if it feels that it's necessary to review that finding, to affirm that finding and hold that the board did have a plausible basis for finding that it was not material because it did not corroborate existing, in particular, the 2002 VA medical record that was before the RO in April 2003. The reason primarily is that the 2004 medical record, that staff psychiatrist simply repeated what the other doctor had said with regard to the continuity. The staff psychiatrist did not offer his own opinion on the matter or say anything that would strengthen any statements in the 2002 decision. The 2004 the staff psychiatrist distanced himself from any matters regarding the compensation and said essentially, I'm just here to treat you, I'm not here to weigh in on as to whether this links back to service. So that's why we're asking this court to, if it even gets to that question, to affirm that factual finding for clear error. As for there's a question that arose in I'm just trying to answer some of the questions I heard earlier.
I can re-ask mine.
If you have any, that I'm just trying to address everything that came up, but without jumping too far ahead. That's really the main point the Secretary wanted to make under 3.156B, is that this is a factual finding.
So what do you think about one of Judge Sholin's questions of whether or not the board doing this would cure the error? In other words, does this something have to be something that the RO does first?
We read Barad as the court's concern there was with what it called an inadequate record. There was no finding there for the court to review, and it was essentially an extension of the Bond case where the Secretary, in essence, asked the court to assume that this new and material analysis had occurred. The Secretary does not read Barod as saying anything other than there must be something in the record that directly responds to that evidence.
But what about the argument that the veteran would be entitled to one review by the Secretary, right? In other words, an administrative appeal of that decision. Is that just rendered moot because, you know, we're here to conduct a review, or does the veteran have this right that needs to be vindicated in the sense that it's great that the board said it, but the board should have asked the RO what its view was?
The response the Secretary would have is that That issue was not raised either before the board or here, so the secretary would argue that that was, if there was any right to a remand, was at least implicitly waived.
How would he know to raise that argument if the board is making that determination in the first instance?
Well, the appellant, through Mr. Dahake, submitted numerous arguments to the board asking the board to consider whether this document was new and material evidence, and that is exactly what the board did. It committed a number of other errors because it assumed that the RO had done that analysis, whereas in Barad, you can't assume, make that assumption, so that's the secretary agrees that that's a reasons or basis error. But because the board ultimately did respond to that evidence, that the secretary's position is that it wasn't prejudicial. But again, the parties agree that the board committed prejudicial error in its effective date determination, so the case should go back. And if any of these errors are prejudicial, the board can address them at that time as well. So again, the secretary is not defending the board's denial of an effective date here. The only area of disagreement is that the appellant has not demonstrated that the board's factual finding was clearly erroneous. And on moving on to the statement of the case issue, and we can go back to the 3.156B issue if some questions come up, but Judge Allen and Judge Scholin in particular seem to express some concerns about holding that a statement of the case can be collaterally attacked on grounds of clear and unmistakable error. The Secretary shares those concerns, and his concession here that a statement of the case could be attacked on grounds of Q is not a concession that he made lightly. If there was a way to argue to assist the court and provide a reason as to whether the answer is definitely yes or no, the Secretary would have offered that argument, but based on the decision review officer process, given this court's decision Prickett, which says that a statement of the case could qualify as an adjudicatory decision, and given that this is a somewhat unusual case and that the statement of the case, the appeal was not perfected, then this does appear to be an instance where a statement of the case could qualify as both a statement of the case and a decision that can be collaterally attacked on grounds of Q. So
what about my sort of, and I don't have an answer to this, it's literally a question about the interaction between 3.156B and the Q status of the SOC as a theoretical matter. In other words, you know, here we have this situation where from a finality point of view, there's nothing submitted after the SOC within whatever period there was, whether it's a remaining one-year period or a new one-year period, such that could we simultaneously say that decision was one that now is an adjudicatory decision that we can challenge years later by Q, but simultaneously say for purposes of 3.156B, the relevant decision is still the rating decision?
Our response would be this, and I think opposing counsel and I agree. I think your question, you used the word decision several times. The regulation refers to a claim. So let's just assume that this evidence was new and material, or if these service department records were relevant under 3.156C, the claim would remain pending. And that would mean that any decisions in that claim stream would not become final. So our position here is that the Q matters are premature because the board has to first find that the April 2003 rating decision and that claim, which was filed in 2002, did in fact become final at some time. And if and only if it did become final, can we get to these Q matters. And because the secretary agrees that the board committed a number of errors in that those questions, the finality questions, that these Q matters are premature. So I think that just the answer we would
give is that the claim, because the claim was still pending or would be still pending, that we couldn't, we don't get to that problem as to whether this SOC is a final decision that somehow conflicts with the whether the April 2003 decision is also final.
Because if we choose our own adventure and address B or C, we don't get to the Q.
Yes, and what the Secretary is saying is if the court remands this for the board to resolve its errors under B or C, the court, one of two
We're
things could happen. The board could rule in the veteran's favor, and that solves that issue, or the board could come to the same conclusion, but instead address Emerson, address the arguments that Mr. Dahake has raised, and then move on to the Q matters.
Well, if we send it back to address B, we are finding per se that the RO did not address these issues at any given time, and potentially the board's address of that was not satisfactory to satisfy Broad. So therefore, the claim did remain pending until such time as the board addresses it in a 2019 board decision or something. And then if there was Q, would it now, it couldn't be Q because we've decided on it potentially, but if it was Q, would it be to the 2019 board decision? Because the 2004 SOC wasn't final. I'm sorry, I feel like I need a diagram.
So this is why my law clerk and I practice the question.
So I'm just riffing here. So if the 2004 claim has been non-final all this time because of the lack of adjudication per Broad, adjudication finally happens in a 2019 board decision. That now is the final board decision? Not the 2004, right? So we would now have a leftover Q claim pending for 2004 because that wouldn't have been final. Or does it become final once the adjudication happens? That's what I'm asking.
I guess I'm not sure as to the basis for the remand would be. I'm sorry, I can't answer the question. There's a lot of moving parts here.
Okay, so
you're remanding. You've agreed. I thought that you just said that the secretary agrees that remand is required under 3.156B.
The secretary agrees that the court should vacate the board's decision based on its reasons or basis errors under 3.156C, So the whole decision is vacated and remanded. So from there, then all the other issues would flow. There's no basis for the secretary to ask the court to affirm the board's denial of an earlier effective date. So the secretary agrees that effective date decision should be vacated and remanded. The issues are, well, on what basis should the court vacate the board's decision, if the court does so, what should it tell the board to do on remand? And the secretary is asking the court to instruct the board to address a number of issues, including the issues that were raised directly to the board, including whether the court's Emerson decision triggers a duty to reconsider the 2002 claim denied in April 2003 by way of new service department records, and some issues regarding 3.156B regarding whether these records were constructively before the board or actually before the RO, and if so, whether they were new and material, and so on.
So if we're writing this, right, the 3.156C part seems pretty straightforward to me. But what would you have us say, in your view, to the board about 3.156B on remand?
Well, if we would ask the board to respond to the arguments that this document was new and material, submitted within 1 year of that rating decision, And we would ask the board to consider Turner, which came out after the board's decision, and to explain whether that whether the RO in 2003 or two, it would be in June 2004 had constructive notice of the existence of that medical record.
Of course, on that point, though, there was an agreement before that it was submitted within 1 year of the rating decision, right?
An agreement in the joint motion for remand?
Yeah.
The parties agreed that it was constructively before the board as a matter of law, and that concession, that agreement, would not have been necessary if it was actually before the board. If it was actually before the board, the parties would have said that this document was actually before the RO in 2004. They said they didn't make that agreement. They just said it's a VA treatment record, so it had to be constructively before the RO, which is now, we now know, is not necessarily true. There has to be something in the record.
No, but we, in general civil litigation all the time, we allow parties to enter into stipulations that aren't necessarily true. Right? I mean, it happens all the time. You know, we're going to instruct the jury that today is a Thursday, and the judge says, I instruct you that today is a Thursday because the parties have asked that to be done. I mean, and that happens all the time. So whether or not the record was constructively before the RO, as Turner now lays out the test, I'm not sure why that matters if the secretary at the time agreed to a more veteran-friendly. I have a passing familiarity with Turner, and so I know that we were very concerned in Turner to not open the floodgates in terms of the existence of a VHA record automatically just by its existence and creation being before the VBA. But it seems to me Turner really doesn't speak to whether or not the secretary can adopt a broader determination about what is before the RO.
If it were a factual matter, if the parties agreed that the document was in fact before the record, the secretary would certainly agree that he should be bound by that. The limited argument the secretary is making here is that when the parties misstate the law, that they should not be forever bound by that.
Yeah, but it's not misstating the law. You know, there's a famous structural injunction case about prison overcrowding, in which prior to entering into a consent decree, the sheriff agrees to single cell inmates because he says it's unconstitutional to double cell in a single cell. Shortly thereafter, the U.S. Supreme Court decides a case that says it's not unconstitutional. So the sheriff runs back to court and says to the judge, well, I made a mistake of law. I should be able to get out of the deal. And what the Supreme Court said is, no, that's not a reason to get out of the deal. You made a judgment. You turned out to be wrong. So I'm not sure that gets you anywhere.
We would just emphasize that the argument is just made in the limited context of the parties agreeing that this is what we think the law means, and then when a decision comes out and confirms that that's incorrect, that should not prevent the board from applying the law inconsistent with subsequent case law. That's the point, that hopefully a limited point, that the secretary was making. The secretary does not have any other points to make other than to respond about the continuity argument, 3.303. He did want to emphasize again, as he said earlier, with respect to the cumulative versus corroborative point, the 2002 document did use the word continuity or something along those lines. So the subsequent opinion just paraphrased that. So the board did not expressly point to 3.303, the secretary would still argue that the board had a plausible basis for finding that it was not a material document.
If we agreed with you on that point, then wouldn't that end the subsection B issue? I mean, if we agreed with you that this document is, as a matter of law, it's known that the board was not clearly erroneous, whichever way it is, was not material, then wouldn't that take the 3.156B argument off the table?
Yes, it would. But again, because just this court's case law states that when the court vacates a decision, the entire decision goes back. So what would remain viable of the 3.156B argument is little. I don't think anything would be viable under that. But the Secretary agrees that if the court said, yes, the board did not clearly err in finding that this was new and material, then that would be off the table. But it would be more of an advisory decision at that point because the whole effective date matter goes back anyway.
Well, yes, but it's not, they're not all equal, right? I mean, they all lead to the same result, but what happens is different, right? So 3.156C might lead you to the same date, but what you do under 3.156C is different than what you do under 3.156B, which is different than what you do under Q, right?
Yes.
Right, so, okay.
Yeah, I want to pose to you largely the same question I asked opposing counsel, which is when you have a 3.156B and a C and a Q claim kind of concurrently, is there a principle that would direct how these adjudications are ordered, i.e. that you do one first and then second and then, you know, because that seems to be something we're struggling with, whether we drop in here and look at the harmless error under B or go to C and recognize the error conceded there.
Okay, let me see if I could try to answer this directly. The Q matters only come into play if a particular, and Q is a collateral attack on a specific decision rather than a more general claim. So there must be a specific decision.
And it must be final.
And that decision must be final, exactly. So without these 3.156B and C issues resolved, until those are resolved, we can't even get to the
Q issue. So wouldn't it be logical to go right to the B issue?
So the issues for the board would be to address B and C, and if it resolves one or the other favorably, there's no...
Well, why should we go to C before B? Would there be any reason, any prudential reason to do that? Because it strikes me here, I mean, we have the elephant in the room is whether this statement was material, right? I mean, everything else sort of orders behind that. Whereas what you're saying is take the concession on C, if I'm understanding it correctly, limit it at that, and then just kick stuff back for reasons and bases for a sort of do-over.
And that's exactly what the Secretary is asking to do. That's why his argument went a little bit out of order. He went straight to the 3.156C issue because the error was so...
I understand that, yeah. But as a sort of logical sequence of how we should adjudicate something, why... I'm just not seeing why that would leave the B issue just sort of hanging out there.
So, and this is, I think we're all sort of struggling with the same generic point, which is which of these issues to reach, which can we reach, which should we reach. I've always been intrigued by the fact that 3.156C, intentionally or not, uses the word reconsider or reconsideration. You know, getting to Judge Toth's point, which is if it's six of one, half dozen of another about how this goes under B or C, then C is definitely the path of least resistance. But is reconsideration, in your view, the same thing as a re-adjudication? It's just you're considering different stuff?
Yes, the Secretary can discern no benefit for the appellant by one or the other. If the claim is reconsidered based on new and relevant service department records and granted under C1, then it goes to C3, which determines how to determine the effective date, which is similar to 3.400Q1, which is how effective dates are determined based on 3.156B determination. So they both walk around the paths converge in as far as how to assign the effective date based on the favorable determination. So,
and so basically, and I don't want to put words into the Secretary's mouth, but you're, the Secretary agrees that the type of reconsideration that occurs under 3.156C is not somehow a truncated form of consideration that would occur if you were to, quote, re-adjudicate a claim.
No, the Secretary sees no difference between a reconsideration under C1 versus the if a re-adjudication under B, 3.156B.
Right. Well, and so the only difference being under C and B is what you look at, right? Because under B, you would only look at the stuff that came in within a year if it's new and material with what existed at the time, where in C, you would have pretty much everything plus the new service records, right?
I'm not sure I agree. If okay. new evidence is received within that year, the
under B,
yeah, the claim is pending. So that would mean that if service connection is awarded, and it's sort of difficult to conceptualize this when service connection has already been awarded, and I think that's kind of the difficulty the agency has complying with cases like Bond, but it is the law. So you when you're trying to assign that effective date under Q1, you're looking at the date of claim, which would be 2002, or the date entitlement arose, whichever's later.
Okay.
So, and that's essentially the same under 3.156C3. Which is the language is nearly the same. So, if new material evidence is received versus a re-adjudication, there's no the Secretary cannot articulate how the one would be more advantageous to the other, as long as the initial determinations are favorable. I mean, if the claim is reconsidered under C, but the evidence is not new material under B, then obviously C is more favorable. But if they're both favorable under that, what they are designed to do, re-adjudicate under B or reconsider under C, then there's no, neither is more favorable than the other. Secretary has nothing else to add. He just... just one quick point on the SOC issue. He wants to emphasize that the instances where that would arise would be limited. There would have to be a case where the SOC satisfies the quality of the criteria of a decision, but an appeal is not perfected. So that could explain why the issue. There seems to be no, the question just hasn't been asked, at least, or it hasn't been addressed.
And it would also be time limited between 1997, when the DRO program was started, and probably 2019 under the Appeals Reform Act. There's probably not going to be SOCs anymore.
That is correct. There's a limited number of cases where this would apply, and it just so happens that this case, all those factors fall into place, and the Secretary concedes that this statement of the case qualifies as a final decision. It referred to itself as a decision. The veteran did not perfect his appeal, and the Secretary can articulate no basis as to why it could not be collaterally attacked on grounds of Q, provided that the 3.156B and C issues don't otherwise keep that claim open and pending. So the Secretary just asked the Court to vacate the Board's decision and remand the matters for the reasons we articulated today and in our brief. Thank you.
Okay. All right, so there was a lot going on there. I'll try to get through my points. I have quite a few here, so hopefully I can get through them all. First, I want to point out standard of review. Judge Allen was talking about de novo review, and the Secretary urged clearly erroneous. The en banc decision in Elkins, 12 Vet App 209, says generally the Court's review is clearly erroneous, but they did say that there are occasions where the use of de novo review is appropriate. The court stated a question whether certain evidence is corroborative, is neither cumulative nor redundant under 156A may be considered a matter that should be reviewed de novo, and I would urge that a de novo review in this instance is appropriate. Number two, I'll skip that. Number two, the Secretary, I just want to emphasize the Secretary did agree that the records were in the record at the time, the 2004 records, within a year, and also the Board made this factual finding, RF-15. VA treatment notes containing the February 2004 note were printed and associated with the claims file in March 2004. That may or may not be correct, but it is not reviewable by this court. Talking about 3156C, that I don't believe can happen until a decision is final, because it doesn't help anybody to reconsider a claim or a decision, rather, that has not been finally decided, because there's still more to do. If a claim is still pending, then the VA still has some obligation and could potentially award benefits based on whatever evidence that they are required to review. And so it is a very fine distinction, but I think that until a decision is actually final and there is no new and material evidence submitted, then the 3156C does not come into play.
So I was actually going to ask you whether you had ever been aware of any situation in which the board had, or at the RO, had utilized 3.156C before finality. I mean, I've only seen them sort of years later, basically.
Your Honor, we use this regulation on occasion with the decision review officer and sometimes with the board when it gets to that point where you have appealed service connection. And then you present new service records and say, hey, these help prove service connection. And, oh, by the way, when you do this, you have to reconsider the original claim from 10 years ago and award that effective date. And then they do that. And again, Secretary's counsel brought up the fact that the claim's already been awarded. And I think that adds a very thick level of complexity to this whole thing. But where if this claim were denied, I think it would be much easier, because if 156B applied, it would just go back for a decision, or if it's final, then we're done with that, and 3156C would apply. with regard to your question, Judge Allen, about new material evidence and statements of the case being subject to Q, the regulation, as I mentioned, I mentioned the substantive appeal, the regulation says new material evidence received prior to the expiration of the appeal period will be considered as having been filed in connection. So once that substantive appeal time period has lapsed, then that cuts off any opportunity to keep the claim pending. And to the point of who conducts this initial review, Berard didn't really speak to it, but it did cite to Williams, which said that a later RO adjudication cured a prior overlooking of material evidence. And so it seems to point to, at least in that instance, the RO can cure this error of not reviewing the material or the potentially material evidence. And then, Judge Sholin, once the review happens and the board conducts this review, wherever it ends up happening, and they say it's not material, then that 2004 SOC now becomes final, and that's what has to be attacked by Q. It wouldn't be the later board decision in 2009, I don't believe, because there was no decision made. The only adjudication in 2019 would be the issue is not material. Right. That particular fact can be appealed, but not the finality of that.
But just metaphysically, so a hypothetical board in 2019 says it is new and material. I now put it all into the mix, and I still deny the claim. At that point, the 2019 decision would be the substantive decision that could be attacked by Q, because the other decision would not, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Okay. Well, if there are no further questions, my time is up. We urge you to find that the evidence was material, and thank you very much.
Thank you. The case will be submitted for decision. We'd like to thank the parties for your flexibility with the weather today and moving of time. That was very gracious of you. And the court is now adjourned. We will come down and greet counsel.
All rise.